Today we have Kevin Davidson.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin Davidson graduated from American Heritage High School down near Fort Lauderdale in a little suburb called Plantation. He was an All-American baseball player. He was a catcher. Went on to Rollins College, was an All-American there, played 4 years for Rollins. Mm-hmm. Got drafted in the 28th round and spent 7 years in the Astro organization, Houston Astro organization, playing minor league baseball all the way to the point of becoming MVP of their minor league program in 2003. So he just retired in 2007 and now works in his career.
As a wealth strategist.
A wealth strategist.
And, I like that.
And he's good at that, yeah. Living in the Orlando area. So, Kevin, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, there he is.
How you doing, Dave?
I'm well. And it's been such good fun getting to know you through the last couple of years. Actually, Kevin and I met right after he retired from baseball. And so he's got an interesting background, and we're going to tap into some of his experiences mm-hmm. about that whole period of time when he went through youth sports and all the way into pros.
Well, I would like to start by asking, what sports did you play as a child?
I was actually predominantly only a football and baseball player. I stuck with those two sports, and I never really got into anything else. Football and baseball were my two passions.
Okay, so then what was it that attracted you to baseball? Like, why did you focus on that?
Well, baseball, obviously, when you're younger, you have a good amount of success, which kind of attracts you to the game. I had a strong passion for football, but being I'm not the biggest guy in the world, pursuing a professional career in football, I had to kind of look in the mirror and be a little realistic with myself and decide that, you know, baseball was a sport I was blessed to have the ability to play, and essentially decided to make that my lifelong dream.
And how old were you when you came to that decision?
I was a high school quarterback at American Heritage. So I played football when I was in high school just to kind of stay in shape and keep my athletic ability kind of up and going.
Mm-hmm.
But I really realized that I wanted to play professionally when I was about 9th or 10th grade.
Wow.
So yeah. So the dream started relatively early. I mean,
yeah.
not 4 years old or anything like that.
No.
But even to have played football all the way through high school along with baseball, that's a demanding schedule.
It's a lot to do.
It was fun.
Yeah. So I'm thinking back now and trying to picture you in those, let's say, middle school through high school years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, what was it like in your home life? What were your parents like during that time? Were they, a gung-ho, a crazy a little league parent? Were they more calm than that? How would you describe your parents?
Well, they were definitely, I sit there, and, now I'm actually the coach, the JV baseball coach at Lake Highland, and I see the evolution of, and I don't know if it's the evolution or if I don't know if it's the way I was raised, but my parents never, I grew up with my mom and my grandparents, essentially. They never put that extra pressure on me as far as the expectations of saying, that if you don't play pro ball, if you don't play college ball, it's the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I see a lot of times the parents do to the kids now. They just basically realized that I had a strong passion for it. I was fortunate to have some decent ability to play it. And they just kind of went to my own beat. If I wanted to play, if I wanted to make that a part of my life, they were going to fully support it. If I decided that baseball was no longer for me, they were going to, kind of support that and allow me to move on. They didn't put that extra pressure on me, which, now looking back, I'm very fortunate to have their support and their guidance on that and, kind of let me follow my dream.
Now that's the big picture. So I hear you saying, okay, so you didn't come home from a game and they were pressuring you about, now, get that scholarship, go pro, all that. But what about the day-to-day stuff? Like, did you ever feel any pressure about your play in any given day, any given game?
No, and not at all. I think it's funny because I always laugh at my grandfather about it because, my grandfather is probably my biggest fan, internally and behind the scenes
mm-hmm.
where, I'll sit there and have an 0-for-3 and strike out 2 times, but all he'll talk about is the bad call the umpire had on strike 1, my first at-bat, and maybe strike 2, my second at-bat. It was never, nothing was ever really my fault.
Well,
they never harped on anything and never any at-bats or kind of forcing me to do anything the next game or next go-round.
And that's a tough, good for him, because some of us, and I know that at times I fell into this trap, wanting to give immediate feedback to our children right after. And I talked to a coach not too long ago, and they had played in a big tournament up in Atlanta. And one of the players had pitched a game, and then they left to drive home to Orlando. And the two coaches were left standing there in Atlanta, and they were thinking about this kid driving home with his dad. And they said, well, let's see, they ought to be to Valdosta by now. Probably they're still in the 3rd or 4th inning.
That does not surprise me.
You've seen parents like this.
I've seen parents like that, and I've seen parents much worse, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, as I coach and get involved in it. I think now, you know, baseball at the highest level is a business, and understandably so, but I think sometimes, you know, to no fault of their own, I think parents sometimes try to make it a business in their own personal household. And, you know, I personally don't think that's the way to go. I think you need to enjoy the game for what it is, as a great life lesson, great life tool, and great learning experience. And I think ultimately if you utilize it as that, that's when you're going to be able to kind of leverage the full success that it can bring you.
Yeah, we have we've decided that parents fall into four categories, actually. One is the manager parent, who kind of manages their son's career or daughter's career, and it doesn't have to be baseball. This is in any sport. But, you know, the manager parent, manipulating things behind the scene. The agent parent is the one who is after that D1 scholarship and the pro contract. And the other end is actually the sponsor parent, who doesn't show up at all, just pays the bills.
Yeah.
And so there's some of that going on, especially in youth baseball. I have coaches tell me, you know, parents drop their kids off, and I'm the babysitter. I don't think that's the right way either.
That's awful.
That is. That is. And you know, being at the JV level, I think that's the, you know, you actually brought up a great little line to me when we spoke before about, you know, the old bait and switch. And I think the JV level is really where that switch really starts happening, where, you know, a lot of these people have success, and a lot of the parents, you know, realize that their kid's not having as much success as they've had in the younger years. Mm-hmm. So now they start, in their own brain and to everybody else, start justifying why they're not having the same type of success, when really it's just the level of play just kind of speeds up a little bit, and they're kind of learning how to adapt to that.
Let's expand that. In the early years of baseball, when you're really a little kid, it's not uncommon to be batting, you know, 5 for 10, you know, or even more. You know, I mean, really getting a lot of hits, and the batter seems to have the advantage. You fall in love with a sport like baseball because you know, you have success. And then something happens. Maybe what age do you think it happens where all of a sudden the pitcher starts to throw a little harder, a little faster, a little more accurate, and now the pitcher starts to gain an advantage and the batters start to suffer?
Yep. Well, I mean, if you look at the actual evolution in the game of it, I think you start making it a little bit more noticeable at the age of 14, 15. Mm-hmm. I personally think it starts happening really at every level you go up, even at the age of 5 or 6, because you know, you slowly start finding kids. You know, everybody throws their son in sports at 5 or 6. And then, you know, some of them start weeding themselves out at 7 or 8. Some of them weed themselves out at 10 or 11. Mm-hmm. You know, and then the game starts becoming a little bit more competitive, a little more serious with travel ball, 12 and 13. But at the high school level, you start really seeing the people that, you know, are making sports a top priority, mm-hmm. and kind of the ones that have developed maturity-wise ahead of the other ones. So they start throwing a little bit harder. Their curveball's a little better. So therefore, you know, the batter's struggling a little bit, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where parents and kids got to realize, you know, they got to either step up their level of play or their commitment to the game, or, you know, and like I always say, there's nothing wrong with kind of being capped out or topped out of your potential. You know, there's no such thing as that.
Mm-hmm. You say it's okay, you say, to be tapped out?
Well, I think it's going to happen. I mean, the bottom line is it's going to happen to everybody.
So at some point.
At some point.
It could happen in the minor leagues.
That's what I'm saying. You know, for me, I personally, looking back at it, you know, I mean, my potential was capped out at AAA. Mm-hmm. You know, I personally don't feel, you know, when being involved in the game and waking up every day and saying, I don't think I'm an everyday big league baseball player. Mm-hmm. And you know, for me, it was AAA. Some guys, it may be their sophomore year of high school.
That's right.
Some guys, it may be their senior in high school. And there's no wrong or right answer to that. And there's, you know, that's impossible to determine until your child gets to that age to decide, you know. But that's a very, very hard thing for a player. But and you've touched on it before, for a parent to realize.
Yeah.
You know, maybe my son is, you know, maybe being a good high school player is as good as he's going to be. And there's nothing wrong with that.
There's the key. There's nothing wrong with that. But the child has to deal with it first, and he comes to the realization that, you know, this is, he can see how he stacks up against his competition. I mean, kids are pretty in touch with reality. I heard a kid say to my son, in spite of his dad's ranting and raving about how great it was, this kid said to my son, I'm just not as good as my dad thinks I am.
Yeah. Oh, I hear that all the time.
Yeah.
I hear that all the time.
Yeah, so he was in touch with reality.
Yep.
But his dad was not.
No. And that's the problem you see a lot, I think.
Do you think that the blame at that point, from a parent's standpoint, is, okay, we don't want to recognize or accept the reality that, okay, we've tapped out, so we'll say you're not working hard enough. If mm-hmm. you would work harder, you would be better.
Oh, I've heard it's two. I think it's twofold. It's either my son's not working hard enough, or he's not doing what it takes to be successful, or it's the coach's fault.
Yeah, there's the other half, isn't it? The coach isn't good enough to get my kid there.
The coach somehow has something against my child.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's amazing how many times I've heard that line, and quite honestly, I just can't agree with that. Now, if there's other stuff going on behind the scenes that most people don't know about, that's a whole other story. Mm. But I'd say 95% of the time, you know, all coaches, like anything else, they want to win. They're going to put the best product on the field that they can.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if your son's at the high school level or the college level, you know, these coaches are very, you know, they're living and dying by their win-loss record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not out there to say, you know what, you know, I really don't want to coach anymore, so what I'm going to do is I'm gonna not put two kids in the starting lineup that deserve it so I can lose more games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
Right.
You know, and not every coaching decision is going to be correct, but it's going to be based off what that coach recognizes and sees during practice and during the games over the course of their season.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of parents, that's where I think more parents need to look in the mirror and say, okay, this is where my son is. I want to utilize baseball for what it is, and whatever he gets out of it, he gets out of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Heartbeat Radio for Women, 1410 AM, and this is Growing Champions for Life with David Benzel. He is the sport family coach, and today our special guest is wealth strategist and former pro athlete Kevin Davidson.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. Kevin, let's go back to that whole coach thing for a second. When we blame the coach, it's because we think a coach should be able to take our player from point A, where he is right now, to point B. And, of course, my definition as a dad of point B is someplace much farther on than, you know, where we are.
Yep.
So I'm wondering, why can't the coach get him there? Now, in all fairness, there are times when a coach is not equipped to maybe get the most out of a kid.
Absolutely.
That can happen too, right?
Very much so. I mean, I think, you know, there's a coach for every type of player. Mm. I mean, and, you know, my former agent when I played is a very well-known baseball player by the name of Davey Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first signed my pro contract, Davey and I were hitting in the Rollins cage. And I'll never forget this. And unfortunately, as I recognized this more when I was done playing than when I was playing. But he said, anytime you come into a coach that has a philosophy, whether it's a hitting philosophy, a pitching philosophy, run for the hills. And I, well, Davey, what do you mean by that? And he said, if anybody tries to teach you the same way that they're trying to teach the guy next to you, and the guy next to you, and the guy next to you how to play the game, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
Mm.
You got to adapt your coaching philosophy and your coaching style for that player. And that kind of really hit home to me. And now I really try to emphasize that as a coach, where there's certain kids on the team where I'm going to get on a little bit more than others.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain kids I'm not going to get on more than others. I don't believe you could be this hardcore disciplinarian and really treat everybody that way, because if your job as a coach is to teach these kids, is to get the most you can out of them, then you got to handle them according to them, not according to you.
It's the whole thing of customizing your approach.
A great word.
Yeah, you know, there's something that I used in my book because I had heard it from someone else. I surely can't claim credit for this, but the golden rule says, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't work in coaching. Because maybe you were yelled at, and that worked for you. So you turn around and yell at all the kids you're coaching,
yep.
And that doesn't work. The platinum rule says, do unto others as they would have you do unto them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the essence of customization. It says, I recognize that this player, you know, I can raise his blood level, and he actually plays better. But this other player over here, if I raise his blood pressure, he's going to fold. He's going to get more tense. He's going to make more mistakes. I've got to treat him differently and still get more out of him.
Yep. That's true. You know, I was that player that you were saying that, you know, when I got yelled at, I got motivated.
Uh-huh.
You know, when I had a coach when I was in, when I played for Team USA, Team Florida on the USA team. You know, we traveled around the country, and this guy was an older guy, just an in-your-face type of guy, stuck his finger in your mask and, you know, would yell at you and call you every name in the book to motivate you.
Uh-huh.
And for me, that worked. You know, I like that. I have more of that football mentality. I have a higher energy play.
Mm-hmm.
I play the game at a fast pace. So when I have somebody that allows me to elevate my game to that level, I play better. Now, I've seen over the years that you can't be like that with every other player because, like you said, they'll get tense, they'll get tight, they'll mm-hmm. make more mistakes. And all they'll be worried about is getting yelled at by their coach and possibly yelled at by their mom or dad on the way home.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. You know, Frank Viola, former Cy Young Award winner and MVP,
yep.
you know, for the Twins, he coached Tyler when he, my son Tyler, when he was at Lake Highland. And in the beginning, my son was more like this player we've talked about that gets tight when he gets yelled at. Mm-hmm. And Frank is a, you know, a great guy. He's an Italian New Yorker, and when he decides to send you a message across the ball field, you don't have any trouble hearing him.
No, not at all.
Okay, so my son would just tighten up and actually make more errors. And in the process, and Frank and Tyler and I have talked about this, in the years that he played for him, they both adjusted. Tyler learned to separate the message from the delivery of the message and hear what Frank was trying to say instead of how he said it. And Frank learned that he had to coach Tyler slightly differently than maybe someone like you. Mm-hmm. And it was so interesting how their relationship evolved because of that kind of education they gave each other. It was really cool.
Yeah, it's neat. I mean, it's cool. I mean, coaching has, you know, definitely coaching has its pluses, and seeing kids kind of change and evolve as players. You know, when I was coaching, when I played, I'd come home in the off season and coach kids, and you know, I see how you have the ability to affect their life and see how they grow as young men. Where kids I used to have when they were 10 or 11, you know, now 16, 17, getting ready to decide where they're going to college. It really makes me feel a little older.
Yeah, yeah. How did you deal with the negativity in baseball? How did you deal with this reality that, you know, if you get 3 hits out of 10 attempts, you know, you're doing great? That's a lot of failure there. How did you deal with it?
You know, I struggled. I was one of those players that early on I struggled with it. You know, I was one of those guys that expected a lot out of myself. I expected myself to get hit every time. But then I learned slowly about my senior year in high school, my freshman year of college, where, you know, you started seeing everybody's stats go down a little bit, and you started seeing the game speed up a lot. And I kind of had to come to the realization where, you know, all I had to do was focus on the positive. I mean, if you're not focusing on the positive, this game will really, really eat you alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go up there so many times, and you'll hit a ball hard, you know, right on the head, and hit a line drive right to the center fielder. He makes a diving catch, and you just realize that just cost you a hit. But then you really got to start focusing on the positives, and think about the times where you've gotten jammed, ball hit off your hands, the ball bleeds over the second baseman's head, and you got to hit there.
Yeah,
And so you know, baseball has a very unique way of kind of coming around and showing you the effects of hard work and basically allowing you to realize that you're going to fail a lot. I mean, at some point in your career, you got to sit there and look in the mirror and realize that all you can do is work your butt off, put yourself in the best possible position to be successful, and let all the chips fall where they may. And it's just going to always work out that way.
Mm-hmm. Were there any particular coaches you can tell us about whose style maybe made a difference? I mean, where you know you look back on this person and say, "Wow, I became what I became because of this, either this moment or this person and the continued messages they gave me."
Yeah, I have two, but I'll touch upon one that stands out probably more than others. And unfortunately, this guy came in my life at a very late stage in my career. He was my manager in Double-A, and he was my manager in Triple-A for the Houston Astros, a guy by the name of Dave Clark.
Mm.
And some people may know Dave. He's actually now in the big leagues as the third base coach for the Astros, and he was the interim manager when they fired Cesar Cupo last year. Dave is a guy that, you know, his coaching philosophy is exactly what I try to replicate and what I try to mimic. I find myself out there with Lake Highland kids, you know, saying and doing and acting like he did during the game. You know, he customized, as you said, he customized his coaching style to you, but at the same time, you know, he never embarrassed you, but he would also get on you. He is not afraid to get you in his office and let you know how bad you did. He's not afraid to get you in the office and let you know that you just cost the team a game. But at the same time, he's not afraid to pat you on the back and kind of boost you up when you need to. And that's the kind of guy that all he harped upon was communication. Whether you're struggling or whether you're doing well, he communicated with you. He always let you know where he stood and where you stood to him. He always kind of let you know, how he felt about you and what you need to work on. But at the same time, he was also preparing you for the big leagues. You know, and his philosophy was if he got you in the office and he rode you and he challenged you and you can't handle that challenge, then you surely are never going to be able to handle the challenge of playing in Houston in front of 50,000 people with the Houston Chronicle writing up a big article on you the next day. And that's part of the learning curve of baseball where, you know, as you slowly evolve into a better player and you play to a higher level, you're held to a higher standard.
Mm-hmm.
And you're held to more pressure where, you know, if you're playing for Lake Highland and you mess up, you know, you're messing up in front of 150 people and, you know, it's talked about in school the next day.
It's not everywhere.
It's not. I mean, you mess up in the big leagues, you know, it's in front of 45,000 people, shown on ESPN, shown on Baseball Tonight, and probably written up in the paper the next day.
And then so, you got the clips on YouTube as well.
I mean, and nowadays, I mean, internet and everything else, it's crazy. But, you know, Dave was a guy that, you know, I've never met a player that played for him that did not say he was the best guy they've ever played for. He teaches you about life. He teaches you about pressure. And he teaches you about handling the pressure. And I think handling the pressure is one of the biggest attributes I think any kid at a young age could start learning and carry over to life.
Wow.
That's really good stuff, because now you're talking about a coach who is interested in your whole entire person, your character, and looking at the big picture, not just at today's game. And I like that.
Yeah.
I remember like hearing that.
I mean, at the pro level, it's you know, when you get to pro ball and when you get drafted, you know, these guys are trying to groom you to be a big league athlete. You know, they're no longer just trying to groom you to be an athlete. You got to be able to play at the big league level, and that small part of that has to do with the talent up there. Yeah, I mean, the talent's up there is good, and everything else is great, but it's handling the day-to-day pressure and the day-to-day grind of being a big league baseball player. I don't care how good you are, if somebody just throws you up to the New York Yankees in the big leagues, and you got the New York media all over you with the New York fans, that's not like just going out to Tinker Field and hitting a ball and playing baseball in front of your parents. You got to be able to play with that added pressure on you. And with that comes your mindset and your approach that you work on behind the scenes before you get to there.
But it's also making you a big league player in life.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, we're all going to move on, right? No matter whether the end of your baseball career was in 10th grade or in AAA, we're moving on. We have to be able to deal with pressure in the world.
Absolutely.
And the work environment or whatever else. You have a great story that I'd like you to share about the pass ball story, where, you know, you didn't have very many pass balls at Rollins, and you told me about the time when you were in the minor leagues where all of a sudden you started dropping balls and they were getting past you. Can you share that story? Because it's just a great story about, you know, how you view those kinds of disasters in your career.
Oh, and trust me, I've had a lot more disasters than that one, but that's one that, you know, it always makes for a good story. And it's the way to go, where, you know, the whole mental side of it, you know, where something gets in your head and you start looking at things in a negative light, it's going to eventually take over your life of baseball. You know, I was in Lexington, Kentucky. You know, I was always a pretty good blocker. You know, balls would be in the dirt, you know, I'd block them. Well, you know, I got to a point where one day I was blocking a ball and, you know, it cost me a big game. You know, nothing different than it had in the past. My technique was bad, and all of a sudden the ball gets past me, and, you know, I cost us the game. Well, that year, I mean, I'll tell you, I could not block a ball to save my life. I don't know what happened. At any time there was two strikes, any time there was a man on third, you know, my mind instantly went into negative mode. All I would tell myself is, please don't throw a ball in the dirt. Please don't throw a ball in the dirt. You know, if it's a breaking ball, 1-2 count, just throw it low where I don't have to block it. Because, you know, in all honesty, there was no chance I was blocking it. And if I did, I was just being lucky.
And up to that point, you'd never had a pass ball.
Never. I had, in my first 3 years in pro ball, I had 2 pass balls in 3 years. And this was my fourth year in pro ball. And all of a sudden, you know, catching is actually easier the higher levels you go up.
Sure.
But for all of a sudden, I got it in my head where I couldn't do it. And I couldn't do it. And, you know, my technique was terrible. My mental side was terrible. I couldn't shake it. And finally, you know, I had to sit there one day, and I just woke up, and I, you know, what am I doing? I mean, it's not that hard. You know, it's pure technique, and, you know, you got to start shifting your thoughts to positive thoughts, and all of a sudden, you know, next thing you know, my next 2 years after that, I was back on track. But for that year, I mean, that was a year of misery for me. And, I mean, that's one of those things that I'd call my mom and say, Mom, I don't know how to block a ball. Uh-huh. And they'd constantly have to remind me. I've done it my whole entire life. You know how to do it. But like I said, it's to the point where at every point in your career, it's going to happen to everybody, whether it's hitting, whether it's bunting, whether it's running the bases, whether it's a pitcher throwing a strike. Something is going to get in your head where a negative thought's going to take over, and it's going to affect you and your performance. And blocking just so happened to be for me.
Yeah, there's just no room for that, is there,
in
sports? I mean, sports in general, not just baseball. But once we allow negativity to come in there and root, you know, and really start manifesting these negative pictures in our head, wow, we're headed for trouble.
Yeah.
You end up psyching yourself out before you even get there.
Oh, that's exactly right. I mean, and that's why, you know, baseball players, you look at it, you ever truly sit down and talk to a big league baseball player, they will never tell you that they've seen a pitcher that they can't hit.
Uh-huh.
They think they could hit everybody. You know, in reality, they don't really think so. But the way that they got to talk to themselves, and I know Dave's talked about it plenty of times, where this self-talk is as they're walking to the plate, they feel as confident as they're going to feel. Mm-hmm. And that's their makeup, because they know as soon as a negative thought gets in their head, they are done. Now, and it goes back to what we were saying before, where at a younger age, you know, maturity can kind of take over, where if you're a kid in high school and you're 6'3", 220 pounds, and, you know, you have good bat speed and you're facing a smaller kid that doesn't throw as hard, you could afford to have negative thoughts. Because your maturity and your size and your ability is going to take over and allow you to get away with those.
Mm-hmm.
But at the big league level, and even the college or pro ball level, those negative thoughts start coming in your head. The talent is too high for you to overcome them. It is impossible for that to happen.
Yeah, you don't have a big enough edge.
You don't have that margin. That margin for error is very, very, very slim. Wow. And you look at the stats, and the stats prove it, where, you know, in the big leagues, if you're a great, great, great hitter, which Albert Pujols is considered the best, I think he hit, what, 350, and that's the highest in the league. Where now, in high school, you know, you see these all-county stats, which everybody has, they're hitting 5, 550, 600.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that margin for error is very slim.
Yeah, yeah, wow. If you had one piece of advice for young athletes, you know, what's the biggest mistake or trap you would try to steer them from falling into? You know, what advice would you give them to help them reach their full potential?
Well, I think it's a couple things. I think it's managing their own personal expectations, and really utilizing the game for what it is. I think that's one thing that I really harp upon, and I really harp to my kids, where I want them to have the highest goals possible. I want them to shoot for the stars, and whatever happens from there, happens from there. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I want them to realize that, you know, they got to put the time and the work ethic into it, and to get to that level, it's not easy. It's not easy at all. I mean, you got the best of the best at every level moving up. So they got to constantly keep working and working and working. And once they think they've worked hard enough and that's their goal, they got to work a little bit harder.
Mm.
And the second part of that is just to stay positive. You know, like we said before, I mean, as soon as negative thoughts start getting in their head, you know, they're done. I mean, you can overcome, you know, not being tall enough, not being strong enough, but you cannot overcome negative thoughts.
Wow, that's powerful, Kevin. That is really very good. That's very good. And you're right, there's been a history of players who maybe didn't look as gifted. They weren't as tall, they weren't as fast, they weren't as strong, they didn't have the greatest throwing arm, or they didn't have the most power, but they were still successful. And it's because of either, you know, the combination of their heart and their head.
Yep, it's true. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, you got, and I think a lot of people look to the best of the best in the big leagues and kind of realize, you know, not there's only one Albert Pujols. There's only one Alex Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, a lot of the guys out of the 600 guys in the big leagues, you know, about 450 of them are on the same level. You know, but all the other ones, they outwork everybody, they out-hustle everybody, and they're out-determined compared to everybody. I mean, you gotta put the time and work in, and you got to stay positive doing so, because baseball is a game, and I've told you this a number of times, in my opinion, and now I pick up the sport of golf, but I think baseball, in my opinion, is the greatest sport in the world to prepare you for the real world and handling failure.
Wow, that's a great message. Kevin, I'm so thankful that you spent the time with us today, and we're kind of running out of time right now, but thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's been great talking to you and hearing your story.